Russian rockets hit critical infrastructure and residential buildings overnight across multiple regions of Ukraine.
This attack was different from all previous because Russian forces used six different types of missiles, including six hypersonic aeroballistic Kinjal missiles that Ukrainian air defense is unable to destroy.
Plus, U.S. intelligence officials are skeptical of Russia's ability to win its war.
We assess Moscow underestimated the strength of Ukraine's resistance and the degree of internal military challenges we are observing.
And later in the program, a British robotics company is providing bionic prosthesis to Ukrainians wounded by landmines. Today is Thursday, March 9th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. Russia has unleashed a massive rocket attack that hit critical infrastructure as well as residential buildings in 10 regions of Ukraine overnight. From the Associated Press, Karen Shamis reports.
Officials reported several deaths in the largest nighttime attack on the country in 3 weeks. A day earlier, Ukrainian soldiers rested on the front line in Chaziv Yar in the Bakhmut region as explosions sounded in the background. After a long day of firing at enemy positions, one Ukrainian soldier told the AP, "Bakhmut is important for us. If it wasn't important, we wouldn't be fighting for it. This is our land." The city of Konstantinivka in the Donetsk region riled from the aftermath of heavy bombardment overnight as residents sifted through the debris. Resident Olha Bebashkina says where they are, the shelling happens almost every night. "I go to bed and I don't know if I'll wake up the next day." I'm Karen Chamas.
And now for more on the ground, I spoke with Anna Chernikova, reporting for VOA from Kyiv.
I know that you are hearing it from where you are in Kyiv. Tell us how it started for you.
It was quite a tough night for the whole country. It was another massive missile and drone attack launched by Russian forces across Ukraine. The air alert started yesterday in the evening, and it was on until around 7 o'clock in the morning today, so basically the whole night. I personally woke up at 5:50 in the morning to a sound of a huge explosion in Kyiv. It was in my district, and later local officials reported that it was actually a hit of the energy infrastructure by hypersonic aeroballistic missiles that Russian forces used today in their attack. And this was confirmed by the Ukrainian general staff that Russian forces launched 81 missiles and 8 drones across Ukraine over the night. And again, it was targeting all regions of Ukraine and mainly critical infrastructure. And as what was confirmed by the Ukrainian general staff, this attack was different from all previous because Russian forces used six different types of missiles this time, including six hypersonic aeroballistic Kinjal missiles that Ukrainian air defense is unable to destroy. What's interesting is that this type of missile is used quite rarely by Russian forces, but these missiles are kind of 100% success hit. So this is used for the targets that Russian forces, you know, want to be sure that they will actually reach. One of these Kinjal missiles actually hit energy infrastructure facility in the capital in Kyiv, and this is the explosion that I woke up to. What also Ukrainian general staff confirmed that air defense in total destroyed 34 missiles and 4 drones. Some other type of the missiles that were also used also included missiles that type of missiles that Ukrainian air defense cannot destroy. So some of them were possible for air defense to catch and some impossible.
How successful were they at those targets?
The raw hits of the energy infrastructure in different parts of the country. It was one hit in the city of Kyiv, also in Zaporizhia and in Kharkiv. And as well as in the west part of the country, which is Ivano-Frankivsk region.
And what about the human toll and casualties? What are you hearing about that?
In total, what we know that at least 5 people were killed in the Lviv region and at least 3 were injured in Kyiv because some missiles were destroyed and the debris also damaged civilian buildings. And unfortunately, civilians suffered physically as well. Also, what's also important to mention that 15 hits were reported in the city of Kharkiv and Kharkiv region. So this area was actually under quite an intense attack. 5 missiles hit the same energy facility in the city of Zaporizhia, well, meaning that apparently this was an important target for Russian forces. Also, what's important that according to Ukraine's major energy company, Ukrenergo, as a result of this latest attack, the power supply of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant was disrupted. And it's quite a dangerous situation because it can cause quite a very bad nuclear disaster. And I would just remind that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is currently under Russian control. But just an hour ago, it was confirmed by Ukrenergo that the plant was connected successfully to Ukrainian energy system. And for the moment, the danger has passed, at least for this point of time. So basically, energy infrastructure facilities were targeted in the north, west, south, and central parts of the country, causing troubles with electricity, water, heating supply for the citizens. But at this point of time, according to Ukrainian authorities, most of the regions have the critical infrastructure supply back in order.
And what about the human toll and casualties? What are you hearing about that?
What we know for now that at least 5 people were killed. These are in the Lviv region because one of the missile hit residential area. 3 people were injured in Kyiv, and at least 1 killed and 2 injured in the Dnipropetrovsk region.
Has President Zelensky, has he made any kind of statement about what happened overnight?
Right after the attack, President Zelensky posted an official statement. Basically, he pointed out that, again, a massive attack happened, and again, critical infrastructure was the target. He mentioned that all the repair work teams are working and doing everything to bring people life back in terms of energy infrastructure damages. And of course, he thanked to the Ukrainian air defense, as he always does, who destroyed quite a lot of missiles and saved quite a lot of lives.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. The head of Russia's Wagner mercenary group said Wednesday his fighters had captured all of the eastern part of Bakhmut, and NATO Secretary General said the rest of the Ukrainian city could fall to the invading army in the next few days. We hear more now from Reuters' Tamara Lindstrom.
Mercenary group said on Wednesday his fighters had captured all of the eastern part of Bakhmut in one of the bloodiest battles of the year-long war. But Ukrainian defenders, who had appeared to be preparing for a tactical retreat from Bakhmut last week, on Wednesday remained defiant. Ukrainian leaders now speak of hanging on to the city and inflicting as many casualties as possible to grind down the Russian troops. But Wagner boss Yevgeny Prigozhin said his fighters have taken control of eastern Bakhmut. If true, that would mean Russian forces now hold nearly half the city in their costly push to secure the first big victory in several months. The mercenary leader said his fighters, who have been leading the attack on Bakhmut, were clearing the way for Russian forces.
The world has not yet encountered the well-prepared Russian army, the regiments that have not been used in battle, that have all the possible modern ammunition and surveillance tools. They are perfectly ready, and they are waiting their moment.
But Prigozhin has issued premature success claims before, and Reuters was not able to verify the situation on the ground. Speaking before a meeting of European Union defense ministers in Stockholm, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Russia was throwing more troops into the battle.
What Russia lacks in quality, they try to make up in quantity. They have suffered big losses, but at the same time, we can not rule out that Bakhmut may eventually fall in the coming days.
On Tuesday, a Ukrainian medic told Reuters that all the roads out of the city were under constant heavy shelling.
Ambulances and other vehicles come under shelling, and for that reason, it is very difficult to evacuate people. There are high losses, and among medics in particular.
A Ukrainian military drone showed the scale of destruction in Bakhmut, apartment blocks on fire and smoke billowing from neighborhoods. U.S. Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines on Wednesday described the fighting in Ukraine as a grinding, attritional war. She said U.S. intelligence does not foresee the Russian military recovering enough this year to make major territorial gains.
Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom reporting. Moldova is firing back at what its officials believe are Russian attempts to destabilize the tiny former Soviet republic, which borders Ukraine and has had long leanings toward the West. Moldovan leaders have unleashed a campaign against Russian propaganda that has reopened the debate on the use of the Russian language and on freedom of expression. Jonathan Speer narrates this report from Ricardo Marquina in the Moldovan capital of Chisinau.
Moldovan president takes on a serious tone as she addresses her nation. The government of this small country believes that Russia, a year after starting an expansionist war in Ukraine, has a plan to force a violent change in power here. The purpose of Russia's actions are to overthrow the constitutional order, she says, change the legitimate government in Chisinau to an illegal one, which would put our country at the service of Russia. Moldovan society is deeply divided between Romanian speakers, historically linked to Romania and Europe, and Russian speakers, who maintain strong ties to Moscow. This de facto 50-50 division is the perfect ground for Russian propaganda to promote the Kremlin's agenda here, much as it happened in Ukraine. The cameras are off at RTR Moldova, a channel based in Chisinau. The Moldovan government has withdrawn its broadcast license, along with five other Russian language channels. The official justification is that these channels illegally broadcast programming produced in Russia, but the unspoken reason is different. They are accused of being the hand of the Kremlin in Moldova. Vasily Moisenko is a journalist at the Russian language TV channel RTR in Chisinau. The content from Russia that we broadcast is traditional for many Moldovan viewers. There are many people here who are Russian-speaking, and they really like these programs that are impossible to produce here. The closure of these channels has reopened the debate over freedom of expression during wartime. The authorities responsible for this blackout have been blunt in stating their reasons. Liliana Vitu is president of Audiovisual Council, the body that suspended the license to these channels.
Well, freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom to disinform. We looked at how certain TV stations reported before the war. Prior to the war, we noticed that a group of media stations prepared this attack on Ukraine. It was an informational preparation, justification for the aggression that was to come.
Mikhail Serkeli is one of the best-known political news YouTubers in the country. In his opinion, the now-suspended TV channels are Putin's loudspeakers in Moldova.
Of course, there is you have to choose. There is a freedom of speech from one side, and from another side, there is a security of the country, security of the nation. They are promoting the hatred against Ukraine. They are promoting Russian general line of politics.
Others believe that the suspension of these Russian-speaking channels is an attack against press freedom. That is the view of GRT TV, a channel in the southern region of Gagauzia that broadcasts in Russian, Romanian and Gagauz, the local language that has not been closed. Vadim Anastasov is its director. It is difficult, he says, to state that this is freedom of speech when certain people in power try through their influence to press somehow or dictate something. That is why I think there is no freedom of speech. Moldova has joined countries in Europe in banning Russian propaganda channels, but having such a large Russian-speaking population, the debate in this country goes much deeper. For Ricardo Marquina in Chisinau, Jonathan Speer, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Upwards of 113,000 Ukrainians have temporarily resettled in the United States thanks to the U.S. government program Uniting for Ukraine. And while many of these refugees are finding themselves lost in a new country, a Virginia agency is helping them start their new lives. Ksenia Turkova has the story.
When Russia invaded Ukraine, Olena Onoshina spent months torn between work and hiding in a bomb shelter. In October 2022, she finally decided to come to the U.S. through the Uniting for Ukraine program to live with her son.
When I came to the U.S., I started Googling things like help for Ukrainian refugees and immediately found the ECDC. They helped me find a job, helped with all the paperwork.
The ECDC, or Ethiopian Community Development Council, is a Virginia-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to help refugees who come to the U.S. in search of a new life. Sarah Zula, director of the ECDC African Community Center in the Washington metro area, says refugees from Ukraine and Afghanistan are among those who currently need help the most.
Often people come here, they don't have any family, they don't have anyone. So the first contact they have is us. So our role is to make sure that, you know, they have housing, the children are enrolled in school, or the medical need is covered.
The organization hires refugees to assist other refugees. Those who have been here longer not only find work, but also get to help people who are in the same situation they were in years ago.
There is nothing that can make someone feel more comfortable, more at home than having someone that can speak their language, that can understand, that can say, hey, I took the same journey, this is where I am.
Kyiv native Svetlana Osaulenka came to ECDC for help a few months ago. In Ukraine, she worked for a civic organization and dealt with educational programs. Today, she is helping other Ukrainian refugees at ECDC.
I was hoping to do something that would allow me to help my fellow Ukrainians, and when I found out it would be possible through ECDC, I saw it as a sign from fate.
Since the launch of the Uniting for Ukraine government program in April, more than 113,000 Ukrainians have arrived in the U.S., according to the Department of Homeland Security. Katerina Sorokolit is a recent arrival.
America is so different. You don't know where to begin. You go on Facebook and read post after post, but everyone has different experiences, and you don't know whether it will be helpful for you or not.
Sorokolit left Kyiv with two young children shortly after the start of the war. She lived in Europe at first and then decided to move to the U.S., where she has a close friend. At ECDC, she's found new friends and help with starting her new life. Ksenia Turkova for VOA News, Washington.
Several Ukrainians and Russians who left their countries after the war began now find themselves as classmates in a Turkish language course. VOA's Soner Kizilkaya and Ogulkan Bakalir have filed this story from Izmir, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Marina Shishka is one of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians who had to leave their country after the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year. She has lived in Turkey for 11 months and is now learning Turkish.
After I started learning the language, my life here became much easier. Now I can go to the mall or hospital by myself. This is also how I became friends with my Turkish neighbors.
One of Shishka's classmates in the Turkish course is Marfa Alexeeva, a Russian citizen. Since the start of the war, not only Ukrainians, but also hundreds of thousands of Russians have left their country, including Alexeeva.
I came to Turkey from Russia at the end of October because I wanted to live in a safe and quiet place after the war. I can stay here for a long time. That's why I wanted to learn Turkish. Now I can express myself at the bank, in the market, on the bus.
The Turkish language class for Russians and Ukrainians is organized by the Eurasian Leader Women's Culture and Social Assistance Association in Izmir. The class was initially open for kids, but with a great interest, an additional one was organized for adults. Meeting twice a week, 24 students are enrolled in the Turkish class in the adults section. There is a huge waitlist to enroll in the class. A completion certificate is needed for people who want to get a driver's license or to search for jobs in Turkey.
I came here from the war between Russia and Georgia in 2008, and I understand their pain very well, but I know that speaking in a hate language is not a good thing.
The class aims to integrate Russians and Ukrainians in Turkey. This common goal unites the people of two warring countries.
I consider myself a patriotic person. I try to be friends with anyone who accepts me this way. I see everyone as human. Politics stay outside this door.
For Soner Kizilkaya and Oguljan Bekiler in Izmir, Turkey, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
And finally today, we hear about a British robotics company providing bionic prosthesis to Ukrainians wounded by landmines in Russia's war on Ukraine. It plans to provide ongoing support for soldiers and civilians with lower arm amputations. As Amy Gutman reports from Bristol, a big part of the company's mission is to turn prosthesis into superpowers.
This is the lab at Open Bionics, where the Bristol-based company's sole product, the Hero Arm, goes through rigorous testing before it's shipped to customers. After measurements are entered into a computer-aided design program, sheets of lightweight nylon are 3D printed into a prosthesis that fits from below the elbow. Engineer Joel Gibbard co-founded Open Bionics in 2014 with the idea of combining 3D and bionic technologies to improve what he says are outdated medical devices.
The functionality of the Hero Arm is a multi-grip bionic hand, so the fingers can move independently. You can have different grip modes to perform different tasks. This compares to some of the more traditional myoelectrically controlled hands, which just open and close.
Gibbard says the Hero Arm is lighter and less expensive than other robotic arms, costing between $11,000 and $15,000. Another difference is the company's push to change the perception of prostheses. After gathering feedback early on, the team learned that they could empower customers with swappable covers in different colors and emblazoned with characters from Marvel, Disney, and Star Wars.
We learned about the impact of having something that would help people feel confident about themselves, about their bodies, interacting in public social environments.
He says that's one reason why a nonprofit group in Ukraine that helps wounded soldiers and civilians got in touch.
They wanted to make sure that when those people were being rehabilitated, going back on the street, that the experience they would have is that they were going to be treated as heroes. And they felt that the prosthetics they were being fitted with could have a role to play in that.
17-year-old Tilly Lockie, who has been wearing her Hero Arm since she was 9 years old, is Open Bionics' chief ambassador. A double amputee since childhood, she has more than 100,000 followers on Instagram, where she shares stylized poses with different arm covers. She opened an exhibition last year at London's Science Museum featuring imaginative visions of the future, including hero arms. Lockie says her hero arms have had a powerful impact.
The difference has been insane. Before it was like, oh, what happened? Oh, that's so sad, but it's great. You're making the most out of it now, sort of thing. But now it's like, wow, that's so cool, that's sick, where do I get my own? And I feel like that reaction is just everything compared to what it used to be. It's incredible.
Gibbard plans to expand the Hero Arm line and hopes to make it more accessible for a wider range of budgets. Amy Gutman for VOA News, Bristol, England.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
Of America, Washington, ba 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 zip.
DC.